Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Joker, Watchmen, Game of Thrones, Captain Marvel, Spider-Man, Far From Home.
Yep, that's one.
The Irishman, Parasite, Succession, Toy Story 4, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Pokemon, Detective Pikachu. Those are all of the films and TV that won't be getting any of our awards at the IGN UK Alternative Film and TV Awards.
Spoilers.
2019. Well, people don't know what has won, Al. There's me.
I'm going to change all my awards on the fly right now.
Oh, well, you fucked it then. I'm Simon Cardi, mimicking a Joe Screwell's intro to a podcast and doing it poorly. I'm here with Al Simmons. Alex is sometimes...
I'm just going to try and mimic you, but I can't think of any dreadful puns.
It's impossible to mimic me. I am a unique being.
Do you think?
Yeah, like Dr. Manhattan.
Wow. Matt, hello.
What a Watchmen character do you most represent?
I guess I'm Rorschach. More of a... No, definitely not. Are you calling me a Nazi?
No.
Good
no, I'm
God.
Just calling you...
No, I'm definitely a Dan Dreitberg. Like, I'm just a bit useless.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, who am I to disagree?
Wow.
Should we get on with some awards? It's been a... we were having this conversation briefly before. I think it's been a very good year for TV and film.
I looked through everything that's coming up. Sorry, that came out.
Yeah.
And there was a lot, but none of it that really stood out.
Really?
And that will reflect in the awards right. that I'm about mm-hmm. to go through.
Like, yeah, I think Watchmen and Succession were both absolutely brilliant.
I've not seen either of those.
Oh, okay.
I don't have HBO.
Like, Parasite and The Irishman are two of the best films I've seen for years. Joker is also, I think, very, very, very,
I feel
very,
this
very
year
good.
Has been great, but I think you've had to search in other places. Like, I think generally, like, obviously, I do quite a lot of the film junkets for us.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of those screenings I've been to have been largely sort of just either fine or maybe sometimes even a little underwhelming. I've seen lots of 6 out of 10s this year.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
when it comes to the, like, you know, Endgame was cracking and you know we got all of those bits, but I think the TV side was very much like you had to have it. You were watching HBO or you were watching nothing.
Yeah.
It was really only from Netflix like a couple of things I could say were brilliant.
Well, this comes out this Friday 20th. This is the day before all of us have seen Star Wars, apart from Matt saw it last night, but he's given us zero impressions of that.
I'm going to pretend I have not seen a Star Wars.
You've also Good. Do you want to give a very brief I think we'll go in depth on The Witcher first podcast back in January because we've got an interview and everything, but it is out today.
Yeah,
you've watched it. Just give us a brief, what are you thinking?
Yeah, so at this current time, because I'm speaking to you from the past, I've only seen the first 5 episodes because we're not getting the other ones until later. I think it's a pretty decent stab at having a go at The Witcher, but it's got a lot of problems which prevent it from being like, if you think that this could be the Game of Thrones, it's not at the moment.
Right.
It's got elements that could make it, but it's very much, it's a little bit oddly soapy in moments.
Okay.
It's got some poor dialogue and a very odd construction. But when Henry Cavill's on screen, he is a very good Geralt.
Right.
And he helps carry it through its weaker moments.
That's good. We'll go into depth on that. You can read all of Matt's reviews on IGN.com. You've reviewed the whole series.
Yeah.
a monumental effort.
It's been a big job.
Worth pointing out that these are our alternative awards.
Yes, they're alternative. So these aren't necessarily what we think were the best things that happened this year. But they're just, we try and be a little bit funny. Sometimes we achieve it.
Most of the time we don't. It falls flat.
Yep.
So get ready for that over the next hour, right?
Let's, with no further ado, let's kick them off. Al.
My first award is the Thank God It's Over award. And the runner-up, because I've done runners-up, I don't know if you guys have, but I have.
I have not.
I did not, no.
Goes to Game of Thrones.
Okay.
And it's not because I wanted it to finish, but I did after this season. Because if they'd have kept it going, I think I would have been much happier. Let the whole season 8 breathe, let it go into season 9. But so much happened in such a short space of time, it just felt like it was a disappointing end to something that was... up till that point,
like it seems to be, it's being ignored. I think it was the Golden Globe stuff. They were ignoring it as well, which it wasn't the strongest season of television. There were still good moments, I thought, but it does feel like people have now done a full 180 and now think it's now just like the whole show is tarnished. Like people are going back and going, like,
no.
I'm getting that impression from some people. They're like,
oh, that viewpoint definitely exists. Yes. I think
the
it's
two
bonkers.
Creators, some people are like, oh, now they're now just poison. It's like, they have created one of the most iconic television series of
and
all
I
time.
Would, I'd actually really like to go back and rewatch season 8 with my expectations firmly set where they are now, because like some of those scenes were amazing. You know, when the what episode was it? The I can't even remember the name. Oh, Winterfell, the attack on Winterfell.
Yeah,
the whole battle.
An incredible piece of television.
Yeah.
But just too much happened too quickly.
Yeah.
But that's not my winner.
No.
My winner is Avengers Endgame, because that, frankly, it felt like I'd finally gotten out of a relationship that lasted 10 years and it was just too needy. And it was just like, leave me alone. I don't want to go and see Ant-Man and the Wasp. I just want to have a bit of time away from a Marvel film. And after that, I was like, thank fuck for that.
But it was bloody good, wasn't
it? It was nowhere near as good as Infinity War.
I know. So I think Infinity War is the stronger.
I think Infinity War is stronger, but I still think Endgame was very, very good.
When I finished Infinity War, I wanted to go straight back in and watch it again. With Endgame, I've never ever wanted to watch it again.
I've watched it 2 or 3 times. So
I've seen it twice.
You're a big Marvel fan.
I
expect that. And literally, it was like a line in the sand. That for me, for Marvel, I'm done now. Yeah. For a bit, I just need a break from those.
I do agree,
kind of
it takes a while to get going. It is a little bit bloated in the middle. Not necessarily the middle, more the start. I think it takes a while to get. Once they start doing the actual mission, so there might be some people haven't seen it. It's out now.
Yeah.
So I don't want to ruin it. But
I do admire that its opening is slower, and I like that it takes a little bit of time to deal with the melancholy of the situation. Like, it's a very sad situation at the end of Infinity War. And I think its end point is full of its fan service in the best form. Like, it's quite surprising, but it still gets on with doing the big fan moments. Yeah. I think it has got a odd wobbly middle.
I do think it's just amazing how they have...
Yeah, yes, hey! Yes. There we go.
I do think it's amazing how they have managed to... Like, you compare it to Game of Thrones, I think they actually managed to wrap a lot of that stuff up really, really well. Like, the amount of stuff they had to bring together. Yeah. And I think it's a very... Even if, there's obviously a lot more Marvel films to come.
Yeah.
But if it did end there, that would be a satisfying end.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, honestly, if there was never another Marvel film, I would feel like I got my fill.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Honestly, I believe
they
that is
a lot into
that's why we did our... We've got the preview of 2020 coming next week, I believe. Like, there's only 2 Marvel films.
Yeah.
And one of them's brand new, characters we don't really even know yet. So that's why I'm looking forward to now, a fresh start with all this.
I agree with that. Like, I don't want the same Marvel films now. Like, I don't actually... I know New York superheroes are a big part of that universe, but I sort of don't want to see those, at least for, 8 years
well,
now.
It. Just need a breather.
Yeah.
But that is why we didn't have much of a breather before Spider-Man. That was only a month or two. But I really enjoyed it just because it was fresh and it was not in New York.
So I felt the opposite.
Really?
I
love that film.
The fact that Endgame had finished, I was just like, sorry, Spider-Man, you're done to me. And I watched it, but...
I really, really enjoyed it.
I liked Jake Gyllenhaal. I really didn't like the whole premise of all these silly drones and what a boatload of bullshit that was.
That's the problem they're always going to have with that one. I think what type of scale of event can they do to combat what has happened, but Yeah. I thought it was very, very
good. So there you go. Well done, Marvel.
You're glad it's over. I'll go next. My first award, a little bit of a cheeky one.
Oh,
always cheeky with you, son.
Yeah. The most quotable film that technically came out last year, but everyone watched this year. I think it came out Boxing Day or around New Year's last time last year on iPlayer. It is Bros, After the Screaming Stops.
It's a good film.
It is a great documentary, and I still don't know. Like, it really, like, this is going to sound disingenuous, but it crosses from being unintentionally hilarious to actually being, in the middle, a little bit heartbreaking.
Yeah, oh, there and are then, genuine like, moments of emotion in there, yeah.
It was just a very good film, and I've got about 12 bullet points here from some of the things. I think they're almost all Matt Goss, the lead singer, who is quite the human.
Before you jump into this, have you discussed, because Bros would have come out before I started IGN, do people know what Bros is?
I think we did talk about it on the podcast, but if you don't know, or if you're new, you should watch this, by the way. I think it's all on YouTube, but even if it's not on iPlayer. They were, you can speak more to this than me, Al.
Well, they were the Bros a boy phenomenon. Band.
They very much had
what,
one or
the
two
80s?
Songs.
It must have been the 80s, I guess.
Late 80s,
When
I guess.
Will I Be Famous?
Yeah.
The Banger.
But what else?
That's the only thing they're known for, right?
Drop the Boy. I know they did that.
But they were just basically like One Direction, but for a shorter period of time, and just
so it was the two of them, Luke and Matt, and then they had a
they
drummer,
were bros.
Craig, I think that was his name,
okay,
who just buggered off, didn't do anything.
But
I can never remember which one's which. Like, who's the one that's
Luke
performing
is,
in Vegas?
Luke the drummer. Matt is the singer who's in Vegas.
Right,
the Goss brothers.
and so who was the one that was in Blade and shit like that?
That was Matt as well, wasn't it? No, was Luke.
That's Luke.
He's right. The one. Who's
yeah,
the
he's in Hellboy. He is the elven king in Hellboy.
Right.
But basically, this documentary is charting them making a comeback. I think it was last year or 2 years ago. Like, they haven't performed together since the 80s, I think. Yeah. And they did a big comeback tour, and lots of middle-aged women were crying. It's quite the thing to watch. But basically, it turns out that the lead singer, Matt Goss, is a real-life Alan Partridge, crossed with David Brent, crossed with, I don't know what he thinks he is. But he's actually very successful in Las Vegas, which is the really weird thing. He has like a, what do they call it when you have a residency in Las Vegas? Mm-hmm. That's mad to me. But here's some of the things he said. This is a real person, by the way. This is not a scripted comedy. I made a conscious decision because of Stevie Wonder to not be superstitious. Rome wasn't built in a day, and fuck me, that's true, but we don't have the time Rome had. What does that even mean?
Doesn't
How much
mean
time
anything.
Did Rome have? This is one of the loves of my life. This is my best friend, Alfie, my bulldog. I had him painted, holding a pint of beer.
If you had the money he's got and a bulldog called Alfie, you'd probably do the same.
The thing I want to know is how did, you know, the camera crew that are just doing his...
They must be going, this is gold.
Yeah.
Like, you're just constantly doing this, like, say something else. Here's one I can really relate to. I'm a Londoner. Embankment, Big Ben, cab drivers. That's it.
That sounds like a tweet from a certain account that we all follow.
It really does, doesn't it?
Imagine Embankment being your like
number one thing.
There's a nice hotel there.
Yeah. My brother's the left side of me and the right side of me. You know, sometimes he's one or the other. Who knows? The letters H-O-M-E are so important because they personify the word home. What does that one mean?
Means he knows how to spell home.
Do they personify that?
No, they spell. Oh, yeah. Spell is not the same as personify.
Everyone has to be on the same page, otherwise you don't get to turn the page, because somebody gets left behind otherwise, and then somebody has lost the page of the story, which may be key to the ending.
Come on, that is like, that's Aristotle. That's amazing.
One of my songs is called We're All Kings, which is about a man sweeping the road. He's one of my kings because I'm thankful I don't have to sweep the road.
What a condescending
That is a proper Brent one, that, isn't it? Once bitten, twice shy. 20 times bitten, a little bit shy. There's more.
How many have you got?
I've got a few more, but there's some bangers. This is my cave area. I have crystals everywhere. Love a bit of chess. Have a few glasses of scotch. Have a long game of chess. With who? Who's he friends with?
Alfie
the dog holding a beer. I have a rule in my house. You break it, you fix it. But you can break anything you want.
What? It's the kind of thing, you know, you get mottos above, yeah, like, when you walk into a house of. Maybe it says that.
Oh, yeah, it's like, because when I go into my sister's house, they've got all that, like, love, laugh.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like just that on a plaque above your front door.
Oh, God. Four more. We had one toy that we loved more than anything, and that was a dart. We didn't have a dartboard that went along with it. We had a dart.
No wonder they wanted to become famous.
Yeah. Please, can we start a petition for this ridiculous thing where you can't even play Conkers? You have to wear goggles. That is the biggest problem. You can't play Conkers in England. That's the biggest problem. I was a rectangle and he was a rectangle, and we made a square that became a fortress. What the fuck is he on about? And the last one is a long one, but my word, try and decipher this one. If there was ever 15 one-way streets and one solitary two-way street where me and my brother got to meet in the middle, you helped find that one street. We've met in the middle. Two worlds definitely collided. When two worlds collide, two things happen. Destruction, or the genesis of new beginnings, and you created water on a new planet.
Good. This is...
Oh. That's deep, isn't it?
I actually can't. Yeah. Work it out.
And that is probably all from about the first half an hour of that documentary.
It is a very good watch.
It is. Well,
and there are highs and there are lows, but everything, yeah, it's fun all the way.
It's sad on every meaning of the word.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yes.
And
did
I
actually
love
do
it.
Their comeback
they
gig? I can't remember.
They did. It's, yeah, at the end of the documentary. Right. They, mm-hmm, play, and there's lots of screaming middle-aged women.
Mm.
But yeah, and now, I mean... I want to watch it again now. I haven't watched it in about a year. So.
What's it called again?
Bros. After the Screaming Stops.
Oh, there you go. Just tears.
Yeah. Go on, Matthew.
Do you want to... So a little story about the Bros documentary.
Oh, do it.
When I first knew about that, I was in a place that didn't have a television license.
I thought you said that I was in a dark place.
No,
I was in a place.
So, rather than waiting to visit my parents so I could be in a place with a television license, I thought, like, I might look elsewhere to try and find the film to watch. I do not recommend searching for a film called After the Screaming Stops on certain other websites.
What websites were you on?
Normal acquiring stuff. You don't get a lot of good results for that.
Okay. No. There's a lot of options where that could be going. I don't want to know any of them.
Right, my turn then.
Good. Your
good
turn.
So my first alternative word award is the Insane Dedication to the Project Award.
Is this for me?
No. Oh, okay. Absolutely not. So this is for Louis Leterrier, who's the guy that bought the Dark Crystal back.
Ah.
So Netflix did Dark Crystal Age of Resistance earlier this year, which is a 10-part like prequel to the Jim Henson one.
To watch.
It's really, really good. But Louis Leterrier is the director. Now, Louis doesn't have a very good record. He's the guy that did The Incredible Hulk. And right. Was it the Transporter movies we were looking at the
with
other day?
Statham.
Yeah. So he's made some...
Some people love that.
Well, I don't think they're particularly great. No. So, anyway, I
not
did
naturally
not...
who you'd pick for
no,
a Dark Crystal series.
Not who you'd pick for a sort of child-friendly fantasy, sort of very high fantasy and stuff like that. But the thing is like, he directed all 10 episodes of it, so that's a 10-hour movie.
Wow.
That he's put together since...
With puppets as well.
With puppets. And that's the thing is, like, when you make... Most movies, like, there'll be a combination of on-set and on-location work. You can't do on-location for The Dark Crystal because those locations literally don't exist.
Yeah.
So you have to build sets. Every single character that's in it has to be built. And he was, like, directing and producing it, and he did everything. Like, yeah, there is... Netflix has the documentary, like, the making of documentary, as well as the show. And watching that, like, I can't think of anyone I've seen this year that I know of, in terms of, like, having spoken at Junkets or anything like that, that has worked harder than that guy to make 10 episodes of genuinely incredible fantasy.
And once, yeah, again, you sit next to me every day.
Yeah, yeah. I do sit next, yeah, to you every day, and I watch you
very
tapping
easy
away.
Decision.
So I don't make high fantasy.
Why did he do it? Like, you've watched the documentary. Did he love the original
I think,
so much?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. Sort of like everybody that was involved in that project is in adoration of it. But yeah, I think his decision was like to make it consistent and to develop a feeling of obviously with The Dark Crystal, it has a unified vision because it's just a 1 hour film that that Henson was very, very dedicated to, and he got a very distinct idea he wanted. In order to get that across in like a TV show, like if you split it, you'll end up having like those little independent sort of director visions within each episode.
Yep.
Across 10 hours, it is purely his vision for that world. Yeah, yep. And it feels like it fits so well. And it also provides, like, as a standalone project from The Dark Crystal, because it being a prequel, you don't have to have watched the original. And it's one of those where, yes, it calls back to the original, but you can watch it as the first.
Right. So you know, I don't think I've actually seen the film.
Right, no, I haven't. Mm-hmm.
No. Or if I have, it was a very long time ago.
Yeah, so I love that, I really like Jim Henson's stuff. Like, I genuinely like the Muppets, but The Dark Crystal is a really interesting, quite grim sort of story especially for children.
Yeah.
And this, like, really digs into that. Like, it's, there are elements of it that are almost Game of Thrones-y, just obviously without the blood, because it's, you know, puppets. And I just love the whole idea of it looking at things that were in that original and like expanding it. Like in the whole idea of the original is there are only basically two survivors of a very, very big conflict.
Yeah.
So in this show, you get to see their entire race and how it's broken down into different tribes and how each of those tribes interact with each other. And then having to realize that there's a much larger problem with the Skeksis, which are obviously these horrendous crocodile-like things. Mark Hamill plays one of the main Skeksis and obviously brings his voice talent is incredible.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's slightly jokery in this. It's got that kind of element that he brings to that. But like bringing all that together and knowing that it was basically one person that was at the helm of all that is astonishing.
Have they said anything about a second series for that?
I think like there's definitely room for it. Like when it gets to the end of the story, like you can see where it flows to
it
the next one.
So but, long to make though.
Yeah, like I think it's been quite a quick process in terms of, because I think they started making it in 2017.
Right.
So realistically, actually, for a show that required completely bespoke sets, bespoke characters, a completely new way, because the way that they'd use the puppets was sort of similar to how it originally was, but they'd come up with all new techniques how to make them even more realistic on screen.
Yeah, I guess a lot has changed in however many years.
Absolutely, yeah. So there are certain fundamentals that stayed the same. Like on this podcast a while back, we had Brian Froud on it, who was the creature designer, and he was like, it's surprising how much has stayed the same. But actually it's in the performance, the way that people puppeteer now is very, very different to how they did before. So you've got all of that, and that's been done since, I say it was 2017 when they started making it. So yes, that's quite a long time to make a film, but it's still within the normal realms. But it's all the stuff that comes before, I think. It's like, it may be even like going to a decade in terms of all the planning of it and stuff like that. So it's a huge undertaking.
It's hard to gauge how well it did. Like if people would demand, if they feel like it needs a second series.
So like one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it on here is because like I don't very often hear people talk about it, and I know that it's kind of, it's niche compared to a Marvel film or stuff like that. But I think it deserves every single grain of praise it gets. I was genuinely really taken by it.
And you play with puppets all day at home, so you have a real...
What do you mean?
I've seen you play. He's got a weird collection of puppets. Have you not seen them? Yeah, you have. Don't
this
lie.
This is unusual.
With Muppets and Rainbow Six.
You're creating your own puppet show called After the Screaming Stops and uploading it. That's the weird stuff.
Yeah, you go on dodgy websites looking for stuff that you shouldn't do.
Clearly.
So, yeah, not sure.
Al.
Right, my second award. This award is called It's 2019, What's With This Delayed Release Date Bullshit Award.
Okay.
And I've got two runners-up.
Two runners-up?
Yes. Wow. Yeah. First runners-up, Parasite.
Best film of the year.
Not here, it's not.
Well, it is for me.
Well, you've
that's
watched
a proper
it
award,
by
though.
Nefarious means,
twice.
Simon Cardin.
Yeah.
But it's not actually out in the UK yet.
It's been out in America for about a month or two.
I think it's been longer than that.
It's been out in Korea since March.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. It's a Korean film. So.
Yeah, fair enough. They can have it. Why has it taken almost a year to get here, though?
That's the whole point of this award.
Yeah.
I don't know. And also, if it's been out in the US, it's been subtitled.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, God, it's good.
Second one, Jojo Rabbit. Fuck's sake, I really want to see that film. Yeah, it's out on January the 2nd, so it doesn't come out until these awards.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet, because it's not out yet.
No, exactly.
I do want to see that.
I don't think they've done screening.
The one they did a screening at the, I think it was the British Film Awards, which was when around when we went to see Knives Out.
They did it at the London Film Festival as well, right?
Yeah, but like they are, you know, tiny little elements. Yes. Like it's not for general public.
The one that gets me is... I know it's not because of that, but 1917 is out Christmas Day in America. We have to wait another 3 weeks.
Something like that. Yeah.
It's a British ridiculous film.
What? Oh, yeah, I wonder why that is.
Do you think this is, you know, especially with that, is that revenge because we've had all these Marvel films a day earlier than the States?
But also, like, it's, what a Christmas film. It's not exactly like the uplifting film you want to go and watch,
Isn't it? Like, we don't really do, like, it's a tradition in America. You go, like, they release Christmas Day and Boxing Day films all the time,
like,
don't
Christmas
they?
Christmas Day, halfway through the day. So let's go and watch a film cinema, shall we?
So I used to, for a while, always go and see a film on Boxing Day. Because it was it was a good excuse to get away from the bit of family that you don't want to see.
Well, you've been indoors all day the day before. Mm-hmm. You want to get out.
Yeah.
But you don't actually want to interact with somebody else, which is perfect.
But what has won your
award? The actual winner goes to The Mandalorian.
Ah, yes. Does this apply to all of Disney Plus, then?
Well, I guess so, but that's obviously the show that... I really wish I'd seen it. Yes. I have seen it. But it just infuriates me that in this day and age where... Because games used to be the biggest culprit.
Oh, yeah.
And I get it when, you know, Final Fantasy, whatever came out, and you have to do the translation on that. That takes a lot of time. But these are available everywhere else, and it's licensing bullshit.
Yeah.
And I'm just sick of it.
Sick of it. You want everything now.
And actually, I really do enjoy The Mandalorian. I know Dale's quite down on it. And it's tapered off a little bit. I like the fact it's doing something new in that universe.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love the approach.
Well, there's a new episode out today as we record it.
Yes.
Maybe we should watch that before lunch.
I don't think we've got time.
Oh, maybe after lunch. but yeah, so we're not going to spoil it, obviously, because a lot of people won't have seen it yet because it's not technically out. But I thought... First episode was good.
Yep.
I thought 2 and 3 were very, very good.
Yep.
Then I thought 4 was okay, but I thought 5 was terrible.
Yeah.
That's the one with... what's the one before the last one?
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin it. It is on a familiar planet.
Oh, yes. Oh, I didn't mind that.
Really? God, I thought that one was bad.
I thought it had awful characters in it. Oh, and same for the...
Same with episode 6. Yes. Like, I kind of liked the premise.
Annoying characters.
Yeah. I liked the premise that one they set out with, but I didn't like where they went with it. And yeah, all the supporting characters were...
Yeah.
Like, they've not hired very good actors for supporting roles.
But is this... Like, we've got 2 episodes left now, and of something that was set up in the first episode was like, is this going to bleed into season 2 now?
See, because I love that first like trio of episodes. I think that's a fantastic opener to it.
They actually kind of blended together into one arc, whereas the rest have all been very like, this is what we're doing this week, this is what we're doing this week.
It is like, there's been no continuation really at all. No.
It's weird because like each of those first episodes are actually quite standalone in terms of what Mando is doing in them, but it's got a really strong joining arc that means that those 3 sit together as sort of like the prologue, I guess, or chapter 1 of his journey. And then since then, it has very much, it's gone more the X-Files route of sort of like, these are just standalone. Yeah. There's a foe or an antagonist or some strange situation to deal with.
I've grown to love the music. At first, I wasn't really sure. It didn't sound very Star Warsy to me, but
the music.
It's one of my favourite bits.
I love the tone of it.
I listen to the music while I'm working now. I think it's a really good
track. What they do on the end credits of every episode with the concept art of each episode, I love those bits. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
more than some of the episodes.
But that's it. And like I said, I was chatting to Dale this morning, and obviously you've seen The Rise of Skywalker.
I have
not. But that's, for me, is where Star Wars needs to go next, in just that universe, but experimenting with different stuff that's vaguely familiar, but I don't want to see the same characters anymore.
I want that either take it 1,000 years before or 1,000 years after.
Yeah.
Like, just a long time ago.
Really, really long time ago.
I want that, like...
In a galaxy really far away.
I really like the, which Mandalorian gets really well, that dirty, used future look. I want that to be the consistent thread. Mm. And, you know, I sort of then just there are so many different areas to explore. And, you know, some people, there's always been that argument of like, Jedis are the coolest thing or Jedis are the worst thing about Star Wars. And people either like really want bounty hunter stories, which they're obviously getting with The Mandalorian. Well, I think there are so many pockets of interesting stories to tell in that universe that just don't have anything to do with Luke or the Empire.
Gungan
or
politics. Let's do a whole episode on that. Like Succession with the Gungans.
Like, again, without spoilers, but it's exploring stuff that we've seen in the films, like the IG droid and the Jawas.
Yeah.
And just adding that, like, bringing that whole stuff to life, and it's just like,
I don't need another sand planet. How many planets in the Star Wars universe are just
Well, they
sand?
Are on the outer rim, so, you know, it's, that's how they represent it.
I also like the fact that he's a bit shit.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, like he fucks up all the time, and I like that.
Yeah, fallible characters.
Yeah.
Mm. Good. Yes.
What's your second award then, Cardi?
Oh, a change of tone here. Mine is for the best performance from someone not called Joaquin Phoenix.
Right.
Because I think, even say what you will about Joker, his performance in that is astonishing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He's very good.
But and he will win pretty much every award going, I think. But mine goes to Adam Driver, not for Star Wars, because I haven't seen it, but for Marriage Story, because he is phenomenal in that.
So I didn't even know about this until you mentioned it this morning.
Yeah, it's a film that released in cinemas about a month ago, but then came to Netflix a couple weeks later, very similar to The Irishman. It's a Netflix film, and it's by Noah Baumbach, who I've never really quite got on. He's like an art, more of an art house director.
Yeah,
like, he's a bit Marmite-y, I think.
What else has he done?
What's the really famous Greta Gerwig one?
Oh,
he's married to Greta Gerwig, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. What's the...
What, Lady Bird?
It's the name of the character.
Do you want
I've gone
to...
blank. You search that while
I'll
I...
search.
But anyway, Marriage Story is the first of his films I've really loved. Yeah. And it's just about... It's a two-hour film basically about a divorce. So it's Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson at the end of a marriage.
I can't imagine you sitting at home watching a two-hour film about divorce.
Really? I watch that sort of thing all the time.
Very sad.
Yeah. Well, but it's, and it's all about the process of their divorce and how they look after their one kid because it's split over. It's got like Annie Hall elements. It's a bit like...
Were you thinking of Francis Ha?
I am thinking of Francis Ha.
That's probably
his most well-known one.
Yeah, he's done other stuff like he did the Squid and the Whale as well, which if you're into sort of like your mopey teenager stars, they were.
He does mopey quite well, but I really like this film. Yeah, it's split over like it's that thing of he is like a theatre director in New York, and she's an aspiring actress who was in famous films, and it's that thing of like she has to be in LA sometimes, so it's kind of split across LA and New York, and it's just
it's
a really good two-hour odd drama. It's nothing special. There's no twist or turn. It's just a really solid, really good two-hour drama that's kind of heartbreaking, but also really funny. Like surprisingly funny. I think people have been misadvertising this bit. People have been like, "Oh, it's really a tough watch." Like,
because Blue Valentine is the one that I've seen a lot of comparison
Blue
to.
Have you seen Blue Valentine with Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams?
No,
it's like a fucking nuclear detonation in your heart.
That one is like, that will emotionally destroy you. Whereas this one is a bit more linear. It's a bit more just accepting that these people just aren't in love anymore. It's not like... But there is a couple of scenes in particular. Like, Adam Driver is just kind of quietly, like, great throughout. But then there's one scene, which has now been turned into some sort of internet meme. I don't know if you've seen it. It's just him shouting at Scarlett Johansson. But in that scene, he is absolutely phenomenal. He just erupts, and he's like... His face is just some sort of, like, snotty, snarling mess. Right.
I do think he's an amazing actor.
He has been amazing. Like, even... Didn't really like Girls, the TV show. I watched a few seasons of it.
I've never seen
it. But even in that, he was brilliant. That's the first thing I saw him in, really. And he's brilliant in that. And in Silence. Did anyone see Silence?
No.
It's really good.
I've watched Black Klansman.
I still haven't seen Black Klansman.
Really good.
I love Black Klansman. Was my favourite film of that year. Yeah. Was that last year?
I really need to watch that. But yeah, and there's one moment where he sings a song in the film as well. And he can sing.
He walks out of a radio interview recently.
Yeah,
because he hates rewatching himself perform,
which I can kind of understand. I hate hearing my own voice.
The premiere of Force Awakens.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, that's it. I hate listening to podcasts stuff.
But yeah, just like if you haven't seen, I feel that's gone under the radar a little. It will get, it's the sort of thing around Oscar time, I think, will swell up.
Mm-hmm.
And.
Because Johansson's supposed to be very good.
She's
in it as
also,
well,
so that would be my runner-up for that award. Would be her as well. She's unbelievable in that film as well. Like those two, just because pretty much the whole film is just those two talking to either each other or other people. Laura Dern's quietly funny in it as well.
I like Laura Dern a lot.
Ray Liotta makes a comeback.
Oh, wow. I do think that... I love the fact that Netflix has got these kind of caliber of movies on there. Yeah. But I do think the fanfare around release is a lot smaller when it's that kind of split release. Obviously, something like The Irishman is a
rare occurrence. It's got Scorsese behind it,
exactly.
Right?
But we would have had... I doubt we even got Junket Time for this. And
no,
maybe it's
because
it's not the right sort of film or whatever. But stuff kind of drops and that's it. So, you know, and that I did going through the list of stuff that came out this year, I was like, shit, I forgot that came out because it just kind of dropped on Netflix. And if you're there and you see it, and obviously I get served very different films to my wife and probably what you guys do. Mm-hmm. So you don't always see everything.
Well, we know what Matt's being served these days.
Exactly.
I wasn't searching for it on Netflix.
I've seen your
Pirate Bay's a very different place.
So yeah, Adam Driver is brilliant. Watch Marriage Story if you haven't.
I will, over Christmas, yeah.
Good.
Right.
Something to bring my wife and I together. It's a divorce film, darling.
What a Christmas.
Okay, so my second award is the 4.0 GPA award for best school film. So GPA is grade point average for anybody that doesn't know about the American scoring system.
I have no idea. You're just speaking words at the minute. I don't know what it all means.
And a 4.0 is the highest grade average that you can get in an American school. And so this is actually for two films. So because there have been two films released over here about American schools that have been phenomenal. One is Booksmart and the other is Eighth Grade.
Very different films.
They are very different films.
But yet so similar, Matt. Tell me more.
I've seen Booksmart. I've not seen Eighth Grade.
Right. So Booksmart, as everybody on this table knows because we've all watched it, is sort of like it deals with two girls. So you've got Molly and Amy who are incredibly sort of smart and they've done really well at school, but they realise very quickly that they've missed out on all the partying sort of life. And I think like Olivia Wilde, who's the director, so, you know, previous actor, now in the directing sort of space, she makes that sort of like adventure to pick up everything you've missed out in your high school life in one night.
Yeah.
She gets that like it's almost like a weird road trip, but within the space of 12 hours.
I would normally say something like this is reductive, and it is a little bit, but it is kind of like a female Superbad. In essence,
I think it's a similar fundamentals premise. I think it's substantially better.
It's smarter.
Than,
So I have a real soft spot for Superbad. I still think that film is very funny, but it's definitely far more crude than Booksmart.
Yeah,
Booksmart still has some crude humor
definitely,
in it.
Yeah,
but it's a lot smarter and
definitely. And it's like I think you know can't overlook the fact that like all of its writers were women, and like the majority of its production staff were women. Like this is a film by women, and you can tell that like they feel authentic because of that. But it's just like it's just genuinely hilarious. Like it is my favorite comedy film of the year. It's one of my favorite comedies maybe of the decades, because it takes a lot to make me laugh generally. Like I find a lot of films that sort of just smile along with it, whereas this, you know, easily 8 or 9 times have got a proper like laugh out loud.
It has
me.
One scene that echoes the pool scene from Boogie Nights quite well, which I love a lot. So I can't remember, but it's a really good song that plays as she jumps in the pool and the camera goes underwater. It's very similar to Boogie Nights, and I appreciate any Paul Thomas Anderson reference. He's got a high school film next year.
Yeah.
Or the year after, we don't know when it's coming.
But also, like, Billy Lord, who plays Gigi in that. So Billy Lord is... why is it Carrie
Not
Fisher's
Madonna,
daughter?
That, but her daughter
Madonna
was called
has Lord.
Lord.
Lord, yeah.
Lord Resort. Yeah.
Who knows?
But, and obviously Billy Lord's...
No.
Billy Lord's in Star Wars a little bit. You get to see her occasionally in the background. But, like,
she...
Yeah, she's one of Leia's, like, sort of assistants, I guess.
I didn't even notice that, right.
Oh, no, as in Leia's daughter is.
Yeah.
So not Madonna's.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know what Madonna's daughter looks like. She's not in any of these films, as far as we're aware.
But no, her character in Booksmart is amazing, because she's Gigi, who is like this... Everybody loves her, and she's clearly like one of the most popular kids, but she's bonkers, bonkers. And there's a little bit of that links back to, I don't think any of you will have watched Scream Queens, but it was a very short-lived...
I think I watched the pilot. I think I watched the first
episode. I love Scream Queens. It's just this ridiculous, like...
Are you searching for that online?
We're seeing your internet history unfold in front of us. What kind of things are you into, Matt?
Screaming.
Screaming in pain.
Having to filter through all of this filth to find my good TV shows. But there's a little bit of a link to her character. character, because she was absolutely crazy in Scream Queens.
Right.
Whereas that was like a tribute to like, you know, like slasher films, like yeah. funny oh, slasher okay. films.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This obviously is her just being nuts and yeah. very, very lovable.
She's
for
a
it.
Very good character.
Mm-hmm. On the opposite end of the spectrum, but still a brilliant school film, is Eighth Grade, which is Bo Burnham, who is like, I guess he's one of Netflix's big stand-up comedy.
Yeah, he's like a musical comedian, isn't he?
Yeah, I think had his start out in YouTube and sort of like has built his career on.
I have liked bits of his stand-up. I think I've watched both, despite finding his voice highly irritating.
Yeah, see, I'm not the biggest fan of his comedy, be it his like YouTube career or sort of yeah. like his stand-up, but what he brings to this is he's got obviously a very deep understanding of how social media has affected the life of kids. And so Eighth Grade is about a girl, so played by Elsie Fisher, and I think it's her first role, and she's phenomenal in it.
Yeah,
she plays Kayla, who is this girl that obviously has real deep anxiety. She's
only 13 as well, compared to Booksmart, where they're like 17.
Yeah, well, so Booksmart is obviously at the end of your school career, and it's realizing that you didn't actually have to be a loser to get good grades. You could have had a cool school experience.
Just like me.
Whereas Kayla is sort of like, I guess, midway through school and is very, right. you know, having trouble like making friends and getting on with people.
Just like me.
But it's how social media has kind of like fucked her life sort of view, really. And she makes all of these YouTube videos about like, if you just be yourself, you'll have a happy and successful life. And it's obviously she's not having a happy and successful right. life despite right, this right, right. thing. Mm. And just sort of like seeing her take steps through life. And the thing that I think sums this film up so well is there's one scene where she goes to, she's got like, there's a girl in her class, and like, you know, when like you end up going, oh, go to their house, you'll have a lovely time.
Yeah.
So she goes to a birthday party, and it's obviously all of these people that she's not really friends with, and they're all having a cool time, and she's feeling very anxious about it, and they're having a pool party, and it's her going in a swimming costume that doesn't really fit her properly. Ooh. And as she walks out, it becomes a horror film. And Anna Meredith, who wrote the score for it, it's almost like it becomes slightly John Carpenter-ish as right. the score like goes full synth, and it's very harsh.
Yeah.
And you're seeing all of these kids doing like dive bombs or like handstands and stuff. But the way it's filmed is that they're almost like the thing, like going into horrible right. contorted positions. And it really gets off the whole idea of like, and I sympathise with this because I was an awkward kid.
I was just about to say, those formative years, I absolutely despised.
Yeah.
And I'm so pleased that I don't have to go through that anymore.
Yeah. Well, this is having to do that, but also having Facebook infiltrating your life all the time.
As a parent, it scares the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Mm. And like my daughter especially is quite a... Well, the opposite of resilient, basically.
Sure.
It's almost hard. One. Would you like show this film to a 13-year-old girl? Would you say that it would terrify them?
Well, I think it's got a fundamentally sweet message to it. And so like, it's got her relationship with all of these other teenagers and you know, and then people that are older than her come into it and help sort of guide her a little bit.
Because
obviously when by the time you become like 17, 18, you start to give less of a shit.
Mm.
And
yeah, exactly.
they sort of help her through the story. But it's also the story about her and her single dad and you know, and about like that relationship and about how he can seem quite distant, but it's because she's quite distant from him. And like as the film goes on and you know those arcs are resolved, I think it's genuinely has got a message that it's a shame because it's a 50 when it came out over here it was a 15, so all these 13-year-olds that really could do with the message couldn't go and see it. But yeah, I would, you know, if I happen to have a 13-year-old daughter, I would be showing them the film. Like, I think it's got something genuinely good to say.
It's a nice feel-good 1-2 punch of Marriage Story, I think. Just...
But if their parents are going through a divorce, also show them this.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I don't love it quite as much as you did, but I think out of those, I think I prefer Booksmart.
Booksmart's feel one. Good. I was very weepy with Eighth Grade.
Eighth Grade's not, it's not one. Like, I could watch Booksmart again tomorrow, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, Eighth Grade, you're not watching all the time.
Oh, no.
You've got shitloads of work to do tomorrow, so don't watch it tomorrow.
Have I? We've seen Star Wars.
And then
we're talking about Star Wars, and we've got loads of stuff to do afterwards.
Yeah, that podcast will already be out. You'll have enjoyed our little Star Wars spoiler cast.
Well, you won't get any of my thoughts, sorry.
No, but
I won't be around.
Wants them.
They don't.
Your third award out.
Third and final award, and this is the award for when the entire world is going to shit. These make me feel that actually everything's okay in the world.
Oh, is that coming into work every day? Is that
it's the just award? Everything? Everything. Yeah. No, it's not work. I enjoy work.
I thought the award was coming into work and seeing us everywhere. Right.
So my runner-up is anything with Guy Martin. Are you familiar with Guy Martin?
I feel like I'll recognise once you tell me.
He's a motorbike racer who is a Yorkshire lad.
I do know who that is.
And
the documentary that he did about the Iron Man that they do? Yes, yeah, that was great.
He's a TT racer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But since then, he's done... He basically tries to break speed records.
Right.
And he did a whole thing on D-Day and the tanks. It was always from a mechanical point mm-hmm. of view. Okay. So he's like properly into that kind of stuff. But this year, he has done... he did the world's fastest tractor.
Oh, wow.
Which
that's
actually,
cool.
It's really interesting to watch.
I didn't realise that Lamborghini make loads of tractors.
So it's not. it is a... I think it's a JCB.
Right. Good British brand?
Is it British? No, well, it certainly was a British... Mm-hmm. So if it's...
An institution.
I'm pretty sure it was JCB.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Was it big and yellow?
Yeah, I think it was, but like the work that went into changing it was incredible. He also did the Great Escape, which is like, but the actual can you do the motorbike jumps?
Oh, right.
And he did it
that's
in exactly cool. the same spot where the film was done cool. with all of the original bits and pieces.
Don't spoil it.
Well, I won't spoil it. And then he also did a two-part thing on Japan. And it's just weird having this proper northern guy who hasn't changed at all. Just going to do this stuff. And I've seen loads of stuff on Japan and Japanese culture, but it's just something, he went to places that I've never seen before.
That was more just
Yakuza.
A travel show, that one?
A little bit, but like I don't think he'd ever kind of experienced that part of the world
I'm
before.
I'm interested in that one.
And he went to like, you know, underground gambling dens and stuff like that, and rather than just like, oh, look, there's some funny Japanese stuff. Mm. And it's just more about him being like, fuck me, this is something
more
else I've never
There's
seen.
So many programs you see of people just walking around Japan going, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
That's not interesting.
Well, like, Sue Perkins did one as well, and it was all right. But I like him because he just doesn't change. Mm-hmm. And
are these on BBC or
Channel 4?
Channel 4.
I think they're pretty much all on all four.
Okay.
And I would recommend it, although the ad breaks are painful on all
a
four.
Solid runner-up. Guy Martin. He's used to winning races, not coming
exactly. God, that's good, Cardi. I like that. But in at number one is Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing. And I don't know if you've ever seen this.
I've seen... So my parents watch it all. I've seen bits. I like it. I like Paul Whitehouse and Bob Mortimer a lot. I've just never watched that series.
It is like...
It looks very relaxing.
Most relaxing thing you will ever watch.
Yeah.
And it is just two guys who are very funny, naturally.
Yeah.
Pissing about while fishing. Obviously, fishing is... The mechanic for making it happen, but it's secondary to what happens.
Is it almost like their sort of answer to The Trip?
I guess so. But The Trip always felt a little bit fake and manufactured to me, whereas this is Paul Whitehouse is a big fisherman.
Yeah.
He knows the spots to go, so he's like, right, we're going to go fishing for attention. I know nothing about fishing.
Northumberland.
But then it's just them having a laugh. Yeah. And Bob Mortimer is just... Yeah. So brilliantly funny.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that if when I'm, I don't know, 65, however old it is, I hope I've got a best mate where we can just go and just rip the shit out of each other and have fun.
So I think they decided to do this after he had his heart operation.
Well, both of them were poorly. Yeah. So I think they both had heart problems. He had, Bob Mortimer had a triple heart bypass. I can't remember what he had.
Yeah.
So part of it is also... You know, they used to love going to the pub together, but now they can only have one pint and they're always watching their food, and but actually fish is healthy and it's that weaves through it, but it's secondary to the jokes.
It's pleasant.
Therapeutic and everything is all right.
I have a similar thing with that. I have a real soft spot for any Rick Stein program.
Yeah.
So I'll just watch him.
Yeah.
And that's very therapeutic because he'll just chuckle at fish. Anything relating to fish is just relaxing, isn't it?
If you say so.
Wow.
Or from my list, just northern men.
I'll watch any Ample White House.
That's true.
Yeah. Speaking of British television, my award. Best TV show that never had a chance at the IGN Awards because of America.
Yes.
This Time with Alan Partridge.
Yay.
Is one of the best TV programmes of this
good,
year.
Oh, good, isn't it?
And I forgot it came out this year.
I haven't seen this one.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, God, it's good.
I didn't like it when it started, but it really grew on me. Oh, and now I rewatch it and think it's brilliant.
I do understand Alan Partridge's, you either get it or you don't. and I adore it. So obviously,
I watched the film, which was what, two
years ago. The film is okay, I think.
It's just, it overstays its welcome.
Yeah, it does. Like comedies, like stuff like that, whenever they make them into films, rarely do they ever really work, I think. But he's back on TV. And he's doing his daytime TV.
No, it's not. Like,
it's the one show.
It's the one
like
show. Yeah,
5 or 6 p.m. That's on.
So I did see it. I did see it.
Yeah,
and yeah, I think this more than even some of his other stuff.
Yeah,
is a little bit. You have to kind of get to grips with it, and I think the first episode I found hard.
Yeah.
Second,
once you realise what they're
doing. Okay, right. I know what
they're
doing now.
Brilliant moments in it. Like, it's just so good how they managed to not necessarily reinvent the character, because he's pretty much the same, but the amount of different scenarios they've put him in, like he's hosted documentaries, done radio shows, TV shows, a sitcom, like reality, it's done everything, and I find all of it just hilarious.
Yeah.
I think with this one, it's putting him alongside his co-presenter.
Yeah.
I can't remember what her name was now.
Jen.
Sorry, that's really bad. But that, and so like the whole like little storylines are going, is that he's replacing someone that's ill, and then like the worst happens, and just all of the comedy that comes out of just, it's an awkward time for him to be on that show, and you couldn't have picked a worse presenter.
Amazing. Like, some of my favorite moments are when they do a lookalike section at the end of one of the episodes, and they bring someone that's remotely like Daniel Craig in a tuxedo to talk to him for a bit, and then they bring in an Alan Partridge lookalike who's just like an Irish farmer, and he just
by Coogan.
Yeah, it's played by him and he just looks like bedraggled. Really,
I think I've seen three
and
episodes.
And he talks about the time like his family realized he looks like Alan Partridge. And he just points at a TV and goes, "Who the hell was that?" And he realised he was looking at himself. It was actually Alan Partridge. And he comes on, and then they sing like an IRA song live on air at the end of the programme. And they're just sitting, and Daniel Craig lookalike's just sitting there like, "What's going on?" Oh, it's amazing. Another favourite moment is when they get, what's the Gardener's World man called?
Titchmarsh?
No.
Oh.
The tall curly haired one.
Oh, Don.
Monty Don. They get Monty Don in because he's trying to do a program on, can you bribe like someone for like advertising on TV? Right. He's like trying to get him to promote. I can't remember if it was like a lawnmower or something similar to a lawnmower. Like, can we pay you a certain amount of money to advertise this product in your show? And like, he's just done like an undercover filming of a meeting with him. Kind of like when they did the fake shake thing. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And he's like having a meeting with him, like, we want to like offer you like 10,000 to say some good stuff. And Monty Don's like, no, I won't do that. It's against my values.
Yeah.
And then Potch's like, what will it take? What will it take? And he says, what about £1 billion? And Monty Don goes, well, if you had £1 billion, I'd maybe do it. And he just goes, and you just hear the VO coming with, I gotcha. It's amazing. It's a small moment, but me and Dale, like, that's why whenever we're playing Siege and we're spotting people on drones, you might hear me or Dale just go, I gotcha.
There you go. I would never have realised that.
The third other moment that sticks in my mind is his toilet routine.
See, this is
when he's in a public toilet.
I love this because like Partridge is so often about like the lines are so quotable.
Yeah.
But this is like real physical comedy that, like, his routine of, it's difficult to portray it on a podcast, but
he's kind of like using his elbow to do the paper, and does like a swivel and a squat, and it's so hard. I encourage you, that clip's on YouTube, encourage you to watch Alan Partridge's public toilet routine if you haven't.
Is it something that you've since employed?
I haven't, because I'm not like a germaphobe, and rarely do I actually use a public toilet, really.
Really?
Yeah, like on a train. I try to avoid train toilets
at all costs. But what about, you know, out shopping on a Saturday?
Go out shopping on a Saturday?
You must have a piss in somewhere other than your home or at work.
I use them at football stadiums, actually.
Okay.
I bet they're gross.
They're all right. The new Spurs stadium is very nice and modern.
What about when you need a shit?
Do I do when I'm out and about?
All right. How can you stop it?
I mean, you just have to get in a routine where it happens like first thing in the morning or last thing at night.
Okay. John Lewis toilets.
Yeah.
Always good.
You got to know which ones are good, don't
exactly.
you? Exactly. Yeah, you want to go high end like Marks and Spencer's, Waitrose.
Well, the Marks and Spencer's one near me, not great. And not also, great. Like when you've got kids, you tend to get to know the public toilets exceptionally well. And like when you're walking down the street and you see just the one that's by a car park, And it's like, can I go to the toilet? It's like, fucking no way are we going in there.
Yeah. Anyway, Alan Partridge wins because it's just hilarious. And I want more. Can I have a second series, please?
Well, they're doing another series of Mortimer and Whitehouse. So.
There we go. Is that on 3 now?
The 3, yeah.
Oh, well, there's room for Partridge, though.
Not on season 3, but just has had season 2, is the winner of my next award, which is the Get to the Fucking Point Award, which is for the End of the Fucking World season 2.
Oh.
So
I didn't even know you'd watch this.
Yeah,
I've watched it.
So
I haven't yet. I've watched season 1 and started liking it, but then I didn't really like where it went.
Okay.
So the reason why I call it the Get to the Fucking Point Award is because it does get to the fucking point very, very quickly.
Yeah.
The thing I really like about this show is it's made up of 8 20-minute episodes, and that is, God, that's refreshing in an age of HBO. Yeah. Well, I mean, HBO aren't
the
worst for it.
That's why The Mandalorian's good as well.
Yeah.
Even if you're not loving the episode, it's half an hour and done.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I sort of hesitate to think what this show would look like if those episodes were longer, because it's dark.
Yes.
Like, it's, you know, it's... Carter, you'll know roughly what the idea is from having watched season 1, but obviously it's about 2 kids that are... Well, are they about sort of like 16, 17 maybe? Are they a little bit older by season 2?
Yeah, exactly,
two?
Yeah.
Like, but
I can't remember what happens in season 1, like, but they've just finished school, haven't they?
I think so. And obviously they get, like, essentially end up getting wound up in murder. It's a really dark situation.
Yeah.
And Naomi Aki, who's the new character in season 2, is arguably even darker. Yeah. She's got a really sort of twisted agenda. And like, I just think like the way that that show bounds along... Some shows would take twice the episodes, and those episodes would be an hour long to deliver. Like, it's so punchy.
Yeah.
And it also means that when it gets to deliver some of its punches, there are certain scenes where there's a certain scene in a diner that stretches it out and allows you to really be wrapped up in that plot point.
Yeah.
And I really think nobody seems to be watching it. I very rarely talk to anybody who's seen it.
I'm going to get around to it. I might even do that this weekend.
I mean, you could. I'd watch it in a day.
It's all on All 4 here, isn't it?
It's all on All 4. Has it come to Netflix yet?
I think at the moment, like, they've shifted it up the, like, you know, like the rows of shows that are on Netflix when you open it. They've definitely shifted it up to prepare you for.
Yeah. So I think it's on
2.
Channel 4 here and Netflix rest of the world now. Like, if you're in America, it's just straight to Netflix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. But so you can watch it in a day.
It's really worth watching.
Would you say it's better than the first series?
I think it is, I really like Bonnie in it, who's this new character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it complements the first season very well. It's very much the same stuff. I'd forgotten how harsh. I've forgotten the name of the girl.
Alyssa.
Fuck me. She is hard work, man. Jesus Christ.
Because obviously it's even though like it's got the darkness of what I'd associate with like an American show, it's properly British.
Yes, exactly.
And she's obviously got this really distinct accent.
Yeah.
And obviously James is played by the boy that was in Black Mirror.
Yeah,
he's the one that gets...
Stories. He plays like a weird quivering boy all the
time.
Yes, exactly.
He's very good at weird quivering boy. And he's even weirder in this one. Like, I think his confidence has gone to absolute crap in this one. Mm. And it means that when he gets bursts of thinking that he can do something, he immediately like cocks it up.
Yeah.
And there are some really good twisting elements that come out of that.
Well, that's it. When she... occasionally breaks her wall and you see the softer side of her. It's a really nice...
You can always do that in one sitting as one big old 2.5-hour film.
It's really good. You should watch it.
I'm going to get round to it.
Yeah.
Good. Well, that's all our...
They're all good recommendations, aren't
they? I think so. I mean, there's a lot of good other good stuff we didn't talk about, but you've probably heard
stuff
lots
that you mentioned right at the beginning.
Exactly. But you've heard people talk about all that stuff all year.
And we've got our best of... The official IGN awards are rolling out on the site.
I believe we just announced as we're recording this that Watchmen won our best TV award.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
As it should.
Deservedly so.
I would say as it should. I do think Succession season 2 was better as a whole for me. But they're both very, very good programs.
So I'm not that au fait with Watchmen. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never read the graphic novel. I've watched the film once.
I'm very intrigued.
I couldn't really tell you what happens in it. I heard everyone saying it's like, well, you kind of need to know.
It's a direct sequel to the Watchmen comic.
I would be intrigued to see what. I haven't really spoken to anyone who's watched it without knowing the events of the book. If you've seen the film, you won't be completely lost. Because
all I can remember is
a little,
the big blue man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you might need more than that. But but yeah, I would be intrigued to see how much it makes sense not knowing anything.
I think the first few episodes would probably be fine because it spends so much, like a lot of those episodes are dealing with new characters because it's so, the time period has gone on for so long. But it's in the latter episodes where it starts tying up plot threads that were started in the comic that now influence this. You'd be entirely lost without the context of the comic. Yeah,
right. It's a bold thing to do.
Yeah, it's really brave. They've pulled it off. Admire it.
Yeah.
Admire it a lot.
I finished it. You still haven't watched the last episode.
I got the last one, yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Maybe I'll try and watch that for Christmas and see how
I
go.
I very much enjoy it. So, yeah. Well, I hope everyone has. This is our last podcast before Christmas.
Is
it? Yeah. I hope everyone
has a lovely
Christmas.
Well, there you go. What a way to finish out the pre-Christmas period. Yeah. Advent period.
Exactly. You can watch. Now I've got recommendations to watch things about divorce, fishing, childhood trauma.
Yeah.
More childhood murdering, probably.
Yeah. Rewatch Game of Thrones because it's probably not as bad as you remember.
Yeah, you could do. And everyone, I hope everyone enjoys Star Wars. You know what? I hope everyone enjoys it.
But I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I'm sure they won't. But I'm just looking forward to the final chapter.
Exactly.
In the Sky
I'm looking
Walker
forward
saga.
To inevitably crying a few times.
Just over Christmas.
Yeah.
And on that note, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.